Hey, it's Matt. Today's show is an encore of a show we originally aired back in May. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're spending the hour with Indiana Fever legend Tamika Catchings, who was recently inducted into the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame and has a new book coming out. Tamika, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So what's this book about?
What is this book about? you put me on the spot right off the bat. Wow. You know what? Interestingly enough, so a couple years back, or more than a couple years, probably in 2006, we did our first book, my sister and I, under Catch a Star Foundation. We did our first book called Dreams Are for Catching. And that book was really geared toward like the elementary students, boys and girls, and, you know, kind of focusing on just like catching your dreams and shooting for the stars, which is what our new book is called. But it was more like elementary school focus. And then through all my speaking engagements and stuff, everybody was like, hey, you should do an adult book. So we did the adult book. And same thing happened after that. It was like, oh, well, you know what, you guys, that book is great. And, you know, we're all about, you know, catching our dreams and being able to read about you. But what about the teens and the tweens? And so we just launched Shoot for the Stars. And really, it's kind of six steps and six ways to reaching your goal. And so I kind of talk about my life. It's set up in a journal format, but we are actually launching our program, our first virtual leadership program for teens and tweens, will launch on May 12th. So we're really, really excited about, you know, just getting kids from all over. You know, one of the hard things is obviously when you live in Indianapolis and you do programming under your foundation, most of the time the kids are from here, like they're from local Indianapolis area. But just now, we have majority of the kids that are signed up are not even from Indiana, which is really, really kind of cool. But wanting to be able to hit a bigger demographic and a different area. I'm this is our first time doing a virtual leadership program, first time really doing virtual programming in general underneath our foundation. But I'm really, really excited.
So if you could kind of distill those six steps down into, you know, like a minute or two of radio explanation, what are those steps that you talk about in the book?
Well, I can't tell you. You got to go read the book.
You got to go
That's
get the book.
Whole point. You got to get the book. And then after we get the book and after you indulge in all of this, then you know, you can come back and we can talk more about it. But, I'm going to stick with that because I want people to go and get the book. I think it's great. I mean, we've had people young and old that have gotten it. But I think the biggest thing is, no matter what age you are, and even as I said, like this book is for teens and tweens, but I really do believe no matter what age you are, that you can always learn. And, you know, one thing for me, even as I've gone back and have, you know, proofread over the book, it's interesting because even for me, like I find myself going through the journal exercises and, you know, kind of even at this stage in my life, a lot of the things that my mindset is pretty much the same, a lot like I was when I was younger, as far as always setting goals and being prepared in life and just, you know, constantly going after different goals and trying to achieve different things. And so, like, this is what the book is really targeted towards.
Well, I mean, yeah, this is the third book that you've written, as you mentioned. What have you learned from writing books about the process? I mean, what do you think?
It's a process.
It is, isn't it?
It is a process. And, you know, it's fun, though. I think when you start off with an idea and you start off with something that, you know, like we had a goal of really wanting to target different age groups and kind of like taking that from the beginning and seeing it develop over time. And then, of course, you know, being able to launch it and people being excited about it, you know. But through the process, it is a process. I mean, you are constantly grinding, you're constantly trying to look at it from our standpoint, what would be entertaining and what would keep the teens and tweens' attention and kind of differentiate it from the earlier book that we had. And of course, taking some of the nuggets from our adult book that we have. So it was about, I would say this one took about a year. The adult book took about 3 years. And, you know, the first book that we did took about a year and a half. So we're trying to find that medium ground, but, you know, definitely something when it comes out and you have the finished product in your hand, it's like, whoo, kind of like a deep sigh of relief, but then, you know, a lot of excitement that follows it.
Well, I mean, I'm always curious about people who are already busy to begin with. I mean, you've got the cafe, you've got all these other things going on, and to find time to write a book. I mean, you know, 3 years is a good bit to write a book. Speaking of the adult book, but you managed to put this one together in about a year. Where was the time? When did you work on it?
A lot of great help.
There you go.
My sister is amazing. You know, my sister is absolutely amazing. So she is the one that's really kind of in the room, and, you know, we're talking through, and we had a ghostwriter that, you know, assisted as well from IBJ. So it takes a team to have something like that come into fruition. And I am so grateful for the people that have been a part of our project, and we've had different people for each book. So it's been great just to have a lot of people involved, engaged, and just, you know, anxious to be a part of fulfilling our dreams and our goals.
We're spending the hour with Indiana Fever legend Tamika Catchings, who I must admit has been on my list of dream guests for this show for quite a long time. And I'm so glad that we're talking to you right now. And so I want to talk about this induction into the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame. How did you find out that you were being inducted?
Wow, how did I find out? So last year, roughly October, November, they kind of put out of a list of players that this would be their first time ballot. So, you know, myself and Kobe and Tim Duncan, Kevin Garnett, you know, a lot of first timers, and amongst other players as well. And so, like, that came out last year. And you don't really think about it. It's like, oh, it's cool. Like, I can get on the ballot this year if that even happens, but you don't really like put any emphasis on it. And then during the NBA All-Star game up in Chicago, they made an announcement that, you know, they got down to their finalists and made that group of the finalists. So I'm like, oh, man, like, they have a whole press conference. This is really cool. Like, I'm in the room with all these guys that my dad played with. And so, you know, a lot of them I know just from being with my dad and going to the games and just following their careers when they were playing and you know, beyond. So, like, that was awesome. And then I get the phone call about, okay, you know, like, on Friday, so this was like the Monday, I don't know the specific date, I should know like the specific date, but the Monday before they made the announcement, they let everybody know, like, hey, we're going to call everybody on Friday between 3 p.m. and 5 p.m., and I just remember saying to myself, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I got to wait 2 hours to find out if like, I made the class, this is going to be awful, but I, you know, so Monday comes, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And Friday, like, I wake up at the crack of dawn. I said I already don't wake up early, but I was, like, I was nervous in the morning. And the whole day went by, and I finally, you know, we're in COVID-19, so we're all at home. And I finally had paced the house so many times, and I'm like, you know what? I just need to go out. I need to just get out, because otherwise, like, I know they're not going to call until 4:50, 4:55. Like, the last moment I'm going to get that call. And so I jumped in the car about 2:30, 2:45, rode around for a while, and then 3:15, phone rings, looked down, I answered, I'm like, hello, like, this is so-and-so from, you know, representative from Naismith Hall of Fame, and we wanted to be the first to congratulate you. And I don't even know what else he said, like, I literally just started screaming, and my hands went up off the wheel, and then I realized I was driving, so I heard him put my hands back on the wheel, but... But I, you know, I'm just, even now, like, thinking about it, I was just really, I'm humbled, I'm blessed, I'm excited, you know, I'm thankful, super grateful, that this is just an amazing opportunity. And I think for myself in particular, you know, like, I can be honest and say, like, this wasn't like, I'm a goal person. Like, I set my goals and I reach my goal, you know, like, I work, reach a goal, set another goal, work, reach a goal. And I can honestly say, like, this was not ever really something that I was like, ooh, one day I want to be in the Naismith Hall of Fame, or I want to be a Hall of Famer, just in general. Like, I never really thought about it. I always just said, like, I want to be the best in whatever it is I'm doing. And I'm just thankful that, you know, through the opportunities and through the things that I've been able to do, that God has, you know, afforded me this opportunity to be a Hall of Famer.
I mean, though, can it be a goal of anybody? I mean, it's not really up to you. All you can do is do your best and have your career and have it go the way it went, which was well, thankfully. I mean, have you talked to anybody whose goal it was to end up in the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame, or is it just something that kind of happens and you're lucky that it does?
Yeah, I have not. And it's not because I haven't. I have not because, and probably more so because, you know, like even after that, like we just have been so busy. Right after that happened, the WNBA draft was going on, and you know, getting prepared for that on the phone 24/7, but prep time for that, and amongst other things that are going on. So it'll be interesting because, you know, one of the pieces of advice I got from Grant Hill, actually in Chicago, he said, you know what, like, enjoy every step of the way. And, you know, Kevin Garnett had, like, his whole video crew following him around. And I'm like, yeah, man, that's awesome. Maybe you could just get the footage and then send it to me, and I'll just use the footage you have so I don't have to hire my own crew, right? But, you know, I think that when it happens and when we get into that moment, really being able to take a step back and talk through all the amazing things that have happened in all of our lives, you know, for Tim Duncan, for Kevin Garnett, myself, you know, Kim Mulkey, even, you know, Rudy T. Like, I think it's going to be a lot of fun just going back and hearing the story. But you're right. I don't think you dream about it. I think it just happens.
So, I mean, you wanted to play basketball for basically your entire life. So what, I guess, was, speaking of goals, what was your goal when you were young?
My goal was to be in the NBA.
The NBA.
You know, in the NBA, because the WNBA wasn't around. So yeah. My goal in seventh grade was to follow my dad and to be in the NBA, to be just like him. Freshman year in college is when the WNBA came. And honestly, that's the first time I really, eighth grade was the first time I saw women's basketball on TV, and I saw Pat and the Lady Vols playing somebody. And I, you know, like at that moment, I was like, oh my goodness. If I could ever get good enough to play for this lady, like that would be a dream come true. You know, fast forward, obviously went to the University of Tennessee and played for Pat Summitt. And then freshman year was the first time I saw the Olympic team. And that was the first time that I was like, man, one day I want to be an Olympian and I want to be like them, you know, Cheryl and Dawn and Lisa. And that I want to follow in their footsteps to be and represent my country. And the WNBA started shortly after that, and that's kind of when my goal shifted from wanting to be in the NBA to really wanting to be in the WNBA.
After a quick break, we will be right back with former WNBA player Tamika Catchings. I'm Matt Pelser. That's in 2 minutes. This is All In. Is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking to Tamika Catchings, the Indiana Fever legend who was recently inducted into the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame. Today's show is an encore from this past May. When we left off, we were talking about how your dream was to be in the NBA. Of course, you ended up in the WNBA because when you had that dream, the WNBA wasn't really a thing. So let's talk about that dream to be in the NBA. I mean, what did you think? Did you think, okay, I'm going to be the first female in the NBA? And how did you see that going when you kind of visualized that?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what I thought.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to be the first one in the NBA. And, you know, more than anything, I'm going to follow my dad's footsteps and I'm going to be like him. And, you know, I'm really grateful, though, because when I told my mom and dad about my dream, neither one of them looked shocked. Both of them kind of took it in stride. And, you know, at the end of the day, they were both like, you know, if there's anyone that can do it, you can. And because of the drive that I always had as a little girl, because of the drive and determination and focus and courage and, you know, you name it, especially when it came to sports, I think they were like, you know, it's something that is definitely attainable. And I am forever grateful and thankful for them because of the way that they handled that situation. And the way that they believed in me, like I really thought, and I mean, I obviously don't know what would have happened, what could have happened because the WNBA came, but I really did believe and thought that, hey, one day I will be in the NBA.
I mean, there are certainly players in the WNBA who do just as well, if not better, than players in the NBA. And so, I mean, I don't know. When you look at the future, this may be a weird question to ask, but when you look at the future, do you see like a merger or some play between the NBA and the WNBA? I mean, players are just so good nowadays. It doesn't even matter whether you're male or female in some cases.
Yeah, that's what I think is the most important thing to recognize. I mean, we're all playing the game of basketball, and yeah, sometimes I do get a little frustrated about, you know, just how people try to downplay what we do in the WNBA compared to what the NBA players are doing. But, you know, when I look at it, I'm like, we play ball year round. You know, we play in the WNBA season, then we literally see our families for 2 or 3 days, and then we're flying across the seas overseas to go play in our respective countries. And for me, I played my first 4 years, 4.5 years in Seoul, South Korea. Then I did a half year in Moscow, Russia. I did 1 year in Gdynia, Poland, 2 years in Istanbul, Turkey. And then I finished my last season right after the 2012, after winning the championship in 2012, my last season was in China. And so we are constantly moving around, playing constantly around this globe. And you know, we put in a lot of work, sweat, tears, heart, I mean, all of that, the same thing, the same energy that the guys do. And I really do believe, like, it's hard to compare the NBA with the WNBA because there is a difference. It is men and women. But when it comes to the game of basketball and how much energy you have to put in being able to play at an elite level, that's where the comparison stops, because you have to be ready to play at that level. And that's whether you're male or female.
I mean, along those lines, I guess, what advice would you give a young person right now who is looking at their future and who wants their future to have basketball in it? What would you say to somebody who wants to play basketball when they grow up?
Well, I think the first thing and the thing that I did was I wrote it down. And I put it on my mirror in my bathroom. So every single day when I woke up and, you know, got ready for school, and, you know, I saw that note. I saw that post-it note up on my mirror, and I would determine that there was nothing that would keep me from that. And so there was a lot of sacrifice, and, you know, you're not going to be able to do a lot of the things that your friends are able to do because you got to practice or you got to stay focused. You know, school-wise, you got to get good grades. My mom and dad were like, anything lower than a B was not acceptable in our family. And so we had to focus on being a true student athlete and really focusing on our grades and then turning around and being able to get out and practice. And even during this period right now, you know, there's a lot of people that don't have basketball hoops. But my thing is, okay, you know, what are you doing with your ball handling? What are you doing to improvise? What are you doing to use your creativity to be outside and really be able to focus on different areas of your game? There's a lot of pro athletes that don't have basketball hoops at their houses. But when they come back, they're going to be required to be in shape. They're going to be required to, you know, have worked on something to make them a different player than they were last year. And I think that that's where you really get to see the people and the players that are focused on this is, you know, not just something that I really, really, truly enjoy doing, but this is also at that point, at that level, this is my job. And so really being able to buy into that and to stay focused.
And we talked a little bit about this in the last segment, but can you tell us a little more about the virtual youth development program we got coming up?
Yeah. So that's something that, you know, we obviously would normally meet face to face, and, you know, under the circumstances, it was like, you know, this is a great opportunity to kind of look at ways that we can team up with other basketball teams, men, you know, boys and girls, teams in between, basketball programs, schools, different programs, different boys and girls clubs. I mean, like a lot of different areas that we'd be able to kind of team up and put together a leadership program. So starting on May 12th, every Tuesday, we will actually have a Facebook Live meeting. So I'll be doing that for 8 weeks, starting on May 12th, and just kind of being able to talk to the kids and answer questions and go through the book. You know, there's certain pages that they have to read that align with the phone calls. So going to be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to it.
And that kind of corresponds with the book that you've got coming out. I mean, there's some materials in the book that'll correspond with the program, or is it independent from that?
No. So they'll read certain pages within the book, and, you know, there are some activities that they have to do, not have to do, but there are some certain activities that kind of go along with what I'll be talking about. And so I said it's more of a journal book. So there's, you know, pages that I talk about some of the things that I've gone through. And then there's some pages where it will ask them to kind of go through some of the experiences that they've gone through and be able to write directly in the book or in a journal or notebook or whatever else they want to use. But then we'll come together on those Mondays and or on those Tuesdays, sorry, and be able to discuss it for a little bit.
Let's talk about joining the Fever. What was it like to join the Indiana Fever? I mean, how did that feel after wanting to play professionally for your entire life? You finally got there. What was that like?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I tore my ACL my senior year in college. And so even going to the draft, I just remember sitting there like, nobody's going to want me. Like, nobody's going to pick me. I'm going to be stuck for a year. I have to go overseas and then figure out how to get back and who wants me and who I'm going to be able to play for. But Indiana took a chance. And number three pick, and you know, sat out that first year, came back the next year. So my rookie season started really summer of 2002. And the first time we had a first home game, I don't remember who we played. I don't remember if we won or we lost. But what I remember the most is the announcer saying my name at the beginning, and like the fans just went crazy. And I just remember in that moment, I was like, man, like this is home. Like, this is my new home. And that was back in 2002.
And you spent your entire professional career with the Indiana Fever, with the WNBA anyway. And I mean, that's not common for a lot of professional sports players to be in one team for the whole career. I mean, what kept you from going other places?
The organization, the fans, you know, what we were building here off the court with our Catch the Stars Foundation, family, my mom, my sister moved here with me, and my mom, we ended up moving here, and, you know, and my brother lives in St. Louis, which isn't too far away. My dad is still down in Texas, so he's the furthest away, but really it was the people. You know, it's just, there's nothing better than even now, like being able to walk around in the community and, you know, you get some kids that run up to you like, oh, hey, Kamika. And then you get like some of the older, like graduates, the kids and not kids, but some of our students that are still in college that are like, oh, man, like I remember watching you when I was a little kid. And, you know, you're the reason that I started playing basketball. You're the reason I started watching women's basketball. I mean, there's a lot of element to it. But I think the biggest thing is just the people here are just amazing.
We're talking to Tamika Catchings, the Indiana Fever legend who was recently inducted into the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame and has a new book out, Shoot for the Stars, a playbook for teens and tweens. And, I mean, one thing that comes up a lot when people ask about you is your work ethic. I don't know, where would you say you get your work ethic from?
I get my work ethic from, I think, I was born with a hearing disability, and so I wear hearing aids, and you know, I had a speech impediment when I was younger. And because I was made fun of so much, I literally, my determination to be so good, and you know, and sports was my thing, so to be so good in whatever sport I played, the determination to be the best, I think, is what had carried me in every single aspect of my life. So on the court, I want to be the best. I want to be the best. I want to be the best, whatever sport I'm participating in. And even now where I'm at, you know, in my role with the Fever, like I want to be the best in my role, the best that I can be, not compared to somebody else, but just the best for me.
Your dad, Harvey Catchings, played for the NBA from 1974 to 1985. You've mentioned him a lot so far this hour. What did you learn from him when you were young?
Watching him on the, you know, on the NBA side. And, you know, for me, of course, that's where my dream really came from, is wanting to follow in his footsteps. But one thing that he told me, I remember after I made my goal in seventh grade and up to then, I mean, my dad was my first coach when I was in third grade, like organized sports. The thing that he told me in seventh grade, I remember we went to the gym and I was like, Dad, please, you know, come work out with us. Please, please, please. And so we, you know, get to the gym and I was like, well, can you train me? Like, one day I'm going to be in the NBA like you, so I need to be trained. Like, you need to train me. And the one thing he said, look, I will train you, but the one thing I need you to know is if you ever get to the point where you don't want to play basketball, just tell me. because your passion, when your passion shifts, especially when it comes to basketball and being able to play at such an elite level, when your passion shifts, it's going to be okay for you to move on to whatever your passion is at next. And I mean, I talked about it before, but I really do thank him for that statement, because in that moment, I didn't know what he was talking about. I was like, okay, Dad, whatever. Like, I want to play. Like, this is what I really, really want to do. But in 2014, when I made the decision that I would retire in 2016, like after having the opportunity to play in one more Olympics, I could feel my passion shifting. And not that I didn't love the game of basketball, but, you know, it used to be no issue getting up and going out and getting my shots in and getting my workouts in and, you know, doing all the things that basketball was always my number one focus. And then everything else came, you know, not number one. My faith is number one. But when you start talking about, like, the things that I was involved in, basketball was the thing that, like, I was driven, that drove me. But in 2014, it started really like, man, I really want to do more with the foundation. I really want to, you know, do more with the kids that were impacted. I really want, like, that started becoming, I was fighting whether or not, man, do I go work out or can I attend this program or can I go to this basketball game and support these young kids? I mean, like, I really started getting torn. And at that point, I knew, I'm like, gosh, like, my dad, when he said at some point your passion will shift. And not that you give up on the things that you love, but, you know, like, for me, I could feel like my purpose and God's purpose and calling for my life was, now it was bigger than the game of basketball. It was really starting to shift.
And so you made that call in 2014. You say, I got two more years. But there had to have been some internal decision-making leading up to the announcement in 2014. How long was that, I guess, from the moment the sort of the germ hit your brain, like, okay, I think I need to look at the future and doing something else. I can't play professionally my entire life. Nobody can. But how long was that? How long were you really kind of mulling that decision?
I would say in that moment, I mean, that year was a hard year. Yeah. I hurt my back before the season, during training camp. And ended up having to sit out the first half of the season. So, you know, I had to sit out the first 17 games. And I was just distraught. So when I came back, like, I came back and I played, but I didn't feel right. I didn't feel like I had before. And I mean, that was 2014. So, like, we made the playoffs. We didn't really do as well as I would have hoped to. But, like, I just remember after that, and Rich and I was, you know, the one that actually came. We were doing an event for Texas Star Foundation, and Rich came and just started interviewing me about, you know, hey, like, what'd you think about the season, blah, blah, blah. And then it's like one of his questions, like, how long do you think how much longer do you think you'll do this? And in that moment, I just said, I was like, I'm probably going to retire in 2016.
Oh, wow.
And like, I didn't flinch. It just rolled off. Like, it just came out. And, you know, he went and interviewed a couple more people. Then he circled back to me because, you know, we're good friends too. He circled back and he was like, you do realize what you just said, right? And I was like, you know what? Yeah. So as soon as I left there, I got on a conference call with, you know, my mom and dad are divorced. So trying to reel everybody in the one conference call. I'm like, look, I just want you guys, everybody to know that I'm going to retire after 2016. So Lord willing, I make the Olympic team and have that opportunity to finish on a high note, but that'll be my last season.
When you made that announcement, though, I mean, you just said it was an in the moment thing. I mean, was there any apprehension, or were you just like, you know what? No, that's where my heart is. I'm going to commit. Obviously, you did, but I mean, that's a big decision to make in a moment.
It is a big decision to make in a moment, and best believe our public relations director called right away. Like, you really just say this? Why didn't you tell us? You know, and I was like, honestly, I wasn't really thinking about, I mean, it just happened. Like, it wasn't a planned conversation. It wasn't any of that. It just happened in the spur of the moment. Like, I didn't expect him to ask me a question about when I was thinking about hanging up my gym shoes, you know, my basketball shoes. So I was like, it just happened. But I never did. Like, I felt, you know how you make decisions and you just feel at peace?
Yeah.
I felt at peace. I felt like I was in a really good spot, in a really good place. And I was ready.
Well, you said the PR people came knocking shortly after that. Was there any other fallout that you had to deal with, or did it subside eventually and everybody was cool after a while?
Everybody was, it was shocking, I think, initially for everybody. But I'm like, look, it's 2 years. You're not talking about instantly. So 2015, I mean, we went all the way to Game 5, lost to Minnesota. It's funny because I was talking to Kelly Kostoff, our general manager at that point in time, and we were talking maybe, a couple years ago, and she was like, if we would have won in 2015, do you think you would have retired? And I'm like, well, don't have to answer that question because we didn't win. So, came back 2016, but I'm like, that's an interesting thought. I don't know. I don't know what I would have done. No true fallout. I think everybody knows. They know I play with my heart, and my heart is always in 100% in everything that I do. And even with me announcing my retirement 2 more years, and some people might say, well, how do you know you'll have that passion and love for 2 more years? And I'm like, I know I'll have it, because I'm not all the way. Like, I'm still, even at that point, was still super passionate about the game, and I love the game and, organization and my teammates. And, I could never have seen myself just walking away like instantly. But I knew that the time was coming.
We're talking to Tamika Catchings, who played for the Indiana Fever for a long time, her entire career. She's also the author of a new book called Shoot for the Stars, a playbook for teens and tweens. And we will be back with her in 90 seconds. This is All In. Hey, it's Matt. Before we get back to today's show with Tamika Catchings, I want to remind you that our new app, All In Vox Pop, allows you to send us high-quality voice messages to share with our guests when we're live. We also include topic alerts with the app, so you never miss a chance to weigh in on a topic you care about. Just search All In Vox Pop wherever you get apps. Today's show is an encore that originally aired back in May, right around the time her most recent book, Shoot for the Stars, a Playbook for Teens and Tweens, was released. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Back now to our discussion with Indiana Fever legend Tamika Catchings, who was recently inducted into the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame. And when we left off, we were talking about your announcement in 2014 that you would leave the WNBA in 2016, at least as a player for the Fever. And I'm curious if that, I mean, you said in the 2015 season you made it to Game 5, and so that was good, obviously. But did that announcement in 2014 sort of give you some motivation to finish out strong the next 2 years? And how did you feel after it was over? Did you feel like you put a cap on your career playing?
Yeah, I did. We finished the Olympics and won another gold medal. And I think I got married 2016, so my husband got to come with me over there, and some of my family came. So I think just being able to share that last, kind of like the last hurrah with the Olympics with them, that went really, really well. But I think the biggest thing for me, and probably one of the main reasons why I look kind of 2 years out, is really looking at my team. And I think when you think about legacy and you think about moving on, you always got to put into consideration, like, who's going to follow you? Like, who's going to be the next leader for this team? And have I done enough to help them be able to lead and to help them take over? And so that was something that I really, really, really contemplated and really thought about, was just making sure that our team was left in the best hands as far as which one of my teammates would take over, and leaving the legacy of how we played and competed at such a high level, being able to make sure that legacy remained even when I left.
I want to talk for a little bit about Kobe. You knew him when you were both kids. How did you know him as a child?
Well, it's interesting because both of our fathers played for the Philadelphia 76ers. So they played on the same team. And my mom and his mom, got to know each other. And it's somewhat of a unique world and a small circle when you're running with the NBA families. And so, Dad played right after that. He got traded, and so we moved around quite a bit. But both of our fathers, so they played in Philly, and then we ended up in Italy when my dad was done here in the States. And Jelly Bean Bryant, Kobe's dad, and my dad were both playing on a different team, but we were relatively close. And so, as you know, there's probably not a lot of African-American families rolling around in Italy. And our parents just felt like it was really important for our family to, you know, continue to hang out because, you know, we had done that in Philly. So it was just kind of like the reunion in a totally different, in a foreign land. But that's kind of, that's really like the transition. And we stayed there for a year. And Kobe's family ended up staying there for 6 years, I believe. And then when we came back after that, and, you know, kind of life goes on. And then I remember, like, hearing about this kid, Kobe, that got drafted out of high school to the pros, and, you know, calling my mom, like, wait a minute, is this the same Kobe that we were in Italy with? Like, you know, so kind of funny, like, that whole reconnection. And over the years, you know, really it's been one of those things that, you know, when we would see each other in the same places, and it's funny because you have that mutual respect because of the way that we grew up and, you know, just being around that environment. And everybody's like, well, what was it like? You know, like, how you guys are like best friends and all that. And I'm like, you know, it's interesting because it's not best friends. It's not any of that. Like, I never want to put on a false perception, but because we've always been in the same circle, you know, we have always kept up with each other's lives. We've always, you know, like, been able, when we meet up, it's like we start talking like we never were, you know, it might be years before we had talked, but, you know, like, you just pick up talking, and, you know, it's just kind of like somebody that you're super comfortable being around. And that's really what it was.
And I mean, so how often did you get to see him? And I mean, that must have been really cool, both of you kind of achieving this dream at the same time. How often did you get to talk?
Well I think that what you just said is the biggest thing, you know, being able to live out your childhood dream, and not just be able to live it out, but being able to be successful in it. And, you know, I think the thing that I'm most proud of when I think back at both of us, and not just the things that we've done on the court, but the impact that we've made off the court. And that's the things, like, you talk about, you know, even, you know, for me, like, watching the way he was with Gigi and, you know, his daughter, and watching the way he was, you know, just taking her to the games, and the young girls, the other, his girls basketball team that he coached and was really super engaged with. I mean, like, seeing the impact and seeing the way that he was beyond the world of basketball, like, that's the thing that I am, you know, I'm, of course, like, proud of him for everything that we both have accomplished on the court. But I think more importantly, like, the things and the way that he was off the court, and being so engaged and involved.
I mean, I hate to ask this, but I feel like I have to. I mean, what was it like when he passed for you?
Ooh, man, it crazy. Because I was on the West Coast, and we went to the Oregon State women's basketball game. So we were out there, you know, looking at Sabrina Ionescu and Tati Favoli and Lucy Hebert and Michaela Pivek from Oregon State. I mean, so we were already out on the West Coast. And then for me, like, I was flying from Oregon down to LA and, you know, like, all these other things that were going to be happening. And I remember we got to the game early and was sitting in the parking lot, and I get a message that just kind of flashed his face and, you know, said, like, talking about the helicopter crash. But I don't, even right now, like, I don't comprehend it. Mm. You know, I don't really comprehend. It's just, it's really sad. I just sat in the car for, I don't even know how long, but thank God, like, Mary Ann was with me, Coach Stanley. You know, we were out there recruiting. So, like, she just let me cry and cry and cry. And I tried to go to the game, and I came back out to the car. But I don't know. Like, it's just really, like, I got more upset because right off after that, like, I started getting, you know, messages and phone calls and, you know, people reaching out. I needed a moment to just, like, grieve. And just, like, understand and comprehend, like, what just happened. Mm. And, you know, it's just, but like I said, you know, I go back to I'm so proud of the impact. And I talked to my husband about this, you know, about a month ago. And I'm like, you know, is there any other person in the world that if they passed away, that would have this impact across all sectors of life? And I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there is. But in this moment right now, like for what he has done on the court and for what he represented, and whether you hate him or you love him, like on and off the court, just his dedication, the way he lived his life, his leadership, while some people agreed or didn't agree, and just everything, the epitome of who he was and what he represented, you can't not say and you can't not realize and recognize the level of greatness that he had.
We're talking to Tamika Catchings, who played for over a decade with the Indiana Fever and who was recently inducted into the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame. She also has a new book out, Shoot for the Stars, a playbook for teens and tweens. All right, so I guess were you thinking about what you would do after retirement in the years before retirement happened? I mean, how were you prepared for it?
Well, I don't know if I was necessarily thinking about what exactly I would do, but I will say, you know, I'm thankful. Taj and I, my sister, we started our Catch the Stars Foundation in 2004. And so we run programming year round, doing different programs here in Indianapolis. And starting in 2016, well, 2017, really, we started doing camps and clinics in other cities as well. And so, like, that was kind of my transition. Like, I was going to go and really be a part of the foundation and travel and do the programs. And I would stay involved in basketball and the organization to some extent, but I just didn't know what that looked like. And so that was the beginning thought as I was transitioning out. But as you see, things change really fast.
Indeed. I mean, but how did you shift your focus after your basketball career? I guess, what did you want to prioritize most?
Well, as soon as it got done, so I got married. We got married right before All-Star weekend in 2016.
Wow.
So right before All-Star weekend, right before my final season and the Olympics and all that. So when I got finished, it really was like, I just need a moment to just like relax. And yeah, not have any responsibilities. But, you know, of course, like I do public speaking. That's another one of my, I don't want to say jobs because I love what I do, but that's another thing that I do. And so I, you know, did the public speaking for those 3 months, and then ESPN called about, you know, commentating games. And I remember at first being like, you know, I always said I wouldn't do two things. I said I would never coach and I would never commentate. Well, long story short, I just finished my fourth year of commentating, so I started that, and then of course, like, you're trying to figure out what my role would be with the Pacers Sports and Entertainment, with the organization, and, you know, got back into that, and then I fell in love with a tea shop during my years that I was here, and so the owners said that they were going to be moving, so I ended up buying the tea shop, which is where I'm at today, right now, in this moment.
Yeah.
I love what I'm doing. I love where I'm at. I love, you know, the opportunities that have been presented. I'm in love with being able to impact other people's lives.
So yeah. So tease me. 140 East 22nd. Right. I mean, okay, we got to talk about, I guess, COVID. We can't not talk about it if you're bringing up the tea shop. What's this moment been like for you and the business?
It has been, actually, it's been good.
Yeah.
So we shut down for 2 weeks and really just like we stayed open for a little bit and we did the curbside delivery and DoorDash and, you know, Grubhub and all of that. But then I was like, you know what? We need to like shut down completely. So we shut down for 2 weeks. And then when we reopened, you know, really like for me, it was more from a leadership standpoint, is there a way that I can keep our staff And, you know, we've been doing projects and kind of, you know, thinking about what are some things we can do when we reopen. We still do website orders, so people can still order bulk tea online through our website, teasmandy.com. They can still, you know, get gift cards and order stuff for family members. So we've actually done a really good job. We just started our virtual speaker series this past Tuesday, and for the month of May, every Tuesday we'll have different speakers. You know, our theme for this month, which was planned before COVID-19 happened, but our theme is future planning. And so it's been interesting to kind of see how things have laid out. But I, you know, as far as business and our team, our staff, like we've been working on different projects. We've been getting prepared. We're planning on reopening on May 18th. So gearing up, cleaning up the cafe, although nobody will come inside except for our staff, but just getting ready. So it's actually been not as bad as I thought, but, you know, we're still a small business, so still trying to figure out the things that we can do. But I think that there's enough people that have in this community that have supported us. So I really want to give a shout out to the people that love Tease Me and that have continued to support us.
Well, let's expand it a little bit. What does the city of Indianapolis itself mean to you?
Oh, man. It's home. You know, I've lived here longer than I've lived anywhere else in my life. And it is, I don't know, it's just like I belong here, you know. And everybody asks, like, well, how much longer? How long do you think you'll be in Indianapolis? I'm like, do I have to put a time frame on it? right now, it's just like, this is what I know, and this is the place that I love. My mom is here, my sister, and my little nephews, and my brother-in-law. I mean, my in-laws are in Rockford, which isn't too far away. But, you know, there's so many people here that I love, my family, like my direct family. And then, of course, like people that have become family that are here that I just can't imagine being. I can't imagine right now being somewhere else and having to start all over.
I mean, we talked a lot about goals this hour. I mean, do you have new goals now? And now that you're kind of, well, I was going to say after basketball, but you haven't really completely left the basketball sphere. What do you still want to do? What do you still want to achieve?
Well, my new goal, I mean, I want to win a championship. I want to win a WNBA championship. I want to, you know, put together a really good team. You know, we had a really good draft this year. So Lauren Cox from Baylor, Kathleen Doyle from University of Iowa, and Kamaya Small from James Madison University. So, you know, really being able to bring in some talent that mixes in with the core group of players that we currently have here. But I want to be the best. Like, I want Tease Me to continue to expand. And, you know, eventually, like, I think through this time, we really had to rely more on, you know, website and virtual, like through our speaker series, and trying to figure out other ways to stay relevant. But I want to be the best tee shop. I want to be the best general manager, vice president of basketball operations. I want to just be the best in the foundation, like the book that we just launched and the program that we're, you know, that we've created. I just want to be the best for me, not compared to anybody else, but I want to be the best for me and make sure that when my time is up, that God fulfilled all the things that God has purposed me to fulfill.
Well, Tamika Catchings, I want to thank you so much for spending your time with us today. She's the author of a new book called Shoot for the Stars, a playbook for teens and tweens. And, of course, she is a former WNBA player for the Indiana Fever, and she's now a member of the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame. Tamika, thank you again for taking your time out today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Our show is engineered by Adam Gross, who also composed its theme. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can get it anywhere you get your podcasts. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Matt Felser. Thanks for listening. This is All In.